Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for tuning in with us tonight on the NASCAR podcast. This is scan number 2906, and it is April 25th of 2022. I want to thank everybody for calling in on the show tonight who wants to speak to our guest, which is going to be Darlene Clark. Now, Darlene is just a great family member. Before I say any more with her about her and her bio and everything, I want to tell you, too, about NASCA is that we are, you know, open every all night, 5 days a week, 7 o'clock Central. You can find us right here, and the call-in number to dial in is area code 646-595-2118. So feel free to call in, log that number in, and we'll always be here for you every night. So before I get into, introducing Darlene tonight and everything else, I'm also hosting along with Kim Lakin tonight. Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Thank you for being here, as always. And if you would, would you mind if you went ahead and read the mission statement for us tonight?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have a single purpose here at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with two goals. One, by educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse and preventing facts showing that child abuse can be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And two, by offering hope and healing through the numerous paths, as John had mentioned, and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So that's who we are at NASCA. And it looks like
we have a
great show. I know Darlene as well, so I'm excited to hear her.
That's awesome.
I think
and that's, too, about having Darlene on the show tonight is that everything that NASCA stands for, especially, when we do read the mission statements and we have someone like her that's coming on the show, the first thing that pops out to me about Darlene is that, right there on our front page, it talks about, presenting facts and showing everything that we could possibly, help to educate the public. So I can't think of a better person, because of every abuse that we have been through as survivors, Darlene is just that person who just supplies us with a never-ending, educational platform for everyone. So I want to tell you a little bit about Darlene is that she is a family member with NASCA. And, she's from Tennessee, okay? And so she is a child abuse survivor. She's an author. and she's a family member, as I stated. She's a volunteer and an activist. So she experienced just about all forms of abuse, sexual, physical, mental, monetary, psychological, domestic, spiritual. It was abused by people in power who did not protect her. Okay, so she has two books, and the first book is Shattered Innocence, and the second is Born in a Living Hell. And they are largely biographically. So before I go on, you know, she was basically born into a bad, toxic, and, military family. Okay, so, you know, before I go into any more, I do want to go ahead and bring Darlene in. And I do want to tell Darlene, too, that I'm so thankful that you're here tonight, Darlene. We love you so much. And, you know, we can't wait, you know, to hear all the good stuff that's going on in your life. So welcome.
Well, thank you so much. I'm glad to be back here at NASCA and amongst family and friends here.
Yes, you are.
NASCA is a family where we genuinely care about one another and getting this word out there, getting information. They're not just out here to try to for revenge, as some people say. You're just telling that story, you're just trying to cause trouble. No, not at all. Not at all. If I wanted trouble, I would have got with the senators, the governors. You know, it kept going through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But but the main
thing is...
So
how have you been?
I've been better, but I've been worse as well, so...
Yeah. I know you and I talk a lot, you know. That's great. I mean, you and I talk a lot, and I'm always, you know, excited to hear everything, you know, that you're doing and everything that you're doing for everybody out there. Because I know for a fact, Darlene, that anytime, you know, I've reached out and people needed to reach out to you, is that you've always been there. As, you know, we've been through a lot together. I know so many people that you know. We've been through, you know, working with many organizations, you know, together through other people, which is just beautiful, you know. So
yes, it is.
You know, I want to let the public know, too, you know, about you have so much going on all the time, you know, and that, you know, you're always all welcome here at NASCA, and that we love you so much for being here tonight. So do you want to, you know, kind of tell everyone about your story so they can get a picture of you, and then we can just progress a little bit more and maybe focus on your books toward the majority of the show, if you'd like.
Yes. There's one thing you had wrong in the bio. The first book was actually Born in a Living Hell,
uh-huh.
And I had it published through, I had to pay to have it published through this one company and everything, but I felt like I got lost, basically, so I stopped production of that. So then I went ahead and went for the second book, and this one is more in-depth, and I'm really pouring my heart and soul more into this than I did my other one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's great.
First one, yes, it is, because... Mm-hmm. If we don't show our heart and soul to people when we're telling our stories, is it going to make anybody understand and see? Like, I've been through that too, you know? I understand what she's saying. And I know for one that I know you understand what I'm saying a lot of times as well. And I know Kim does.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go ahead and, first of all, I want to read the disclaimer. All right.
Okay.
Want to tell everyone, I am not a trained therapist or medical professional, and the accompanying activities are not designed to replace proper medical advice or therapy. They are designed to help you verbalize and visualize the pain and emotion associated with any abuse you are directly or indirectly experiencing. And then... share them with said professionals. If you are being abused and or are experiencing pain from abuse, seek professional help immediately. And I want to say that I dedicated my book to fellow survivors, thrivers, and others who help abuse victims.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote down,
great,
I had
I had taken
some notes a while back, and I just opened up this lost notebook that I didn't know where it really was. And I said, this is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can't just
So you're telling me that you have some hidden archives. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, I got bunches and bunches, but we're in my house, and they want me to throw a lot of my archives away because I don't have much room for my archives with my books and stuff.
Yeah. So how often
and
do
I
you
don't
write,
think
Darlene?
I need to.
How often
okay.
do you write?
I've got two other books in the works right now. One's going to be basically Christianity on what God says the roles of a parent is. And then I'm going to be talking about, well, how compare it to how I was done and to see if they think that my parents live by that standard or their parents. Because the basics, when I'm sharing my story, other people are going to know this, too, and feel it.
Right. Exactly. So let me ask you this. I know it's not really a hard question. Because, I don't know, but do you often, you know, think about, you know, how you're growing, you know, by writing these books? And how is it going to affect you as you're, you know, thinking about, you know, how to write it and everything that you have to put into it? I mean, that could be a huge, you know, trigger effect on a lot of people. So what's your secret there about, you know, writing and enjoying it?
Well, years ago, whenever I was still married back in the 80s and 90s,
mm-hmm.
I was in a support group for people that had dissociative identity disorder. Back then it was called multiple personality disorder. So
mm-hmm.
I had so many hidden dark barriers to all these memories that were just hidden. They were so dark.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I started with that, and then every once in a while, I would share something in that group, something that I'd written. And one of the things I had written was called Regina's Triumph. And I guess what I need to do is read about Regina's Triumph, because that's what they had convinced me that I needed to write a book, because they asked me if they could have a copy of Regina's Triumph part so that they could show their doctor, because they cannot explain how they are feeling to their psychiatrist. But with my, you know, Regina's Triumph, that explained it perfectly how they felt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what got me on that curve towards doing that.
Right.
So that was a true inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go ahead and I'll read that if you want me to.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, we just, you know, we got so much time tonight that we have a lot to talk about. So I want you to have an opportunity, Darlene, to, you know, express everything that you want to, you know, in regards to your books and how it affects your life and you know, what you're doing, too, in your life. Because everything you do, Darlene, basically, you know, is such a beautiful part in life, because you have so much to offer, you know, to a lot of people. And, you know, just by knowing you, number one, is always a beautiful example of that period. But, you know, you have books. You also, you know, have your own radio show, too. So we can talk about that later. So anything that you want to, you know, say and do tonight, you are more than welcome to go for it.
Well, thank you. Well, the main reason why I'm going ahead and talking about this is what started me on my first endeavor of starting to write.
Okay.
I had to act like I was someone else just to cope. I soon learned I could be myself, and it was okay. If someone didn't like me for me, it was their problem, not mine. There was a family that appeared to the outside world as poor. Soon to be arriving at the Dugton family was the unexpected and unwanted child, Regina Diane Dugton. She came prematurely with a father claiming that the mother had fallen. The truth was that they wanted to be rid of this child. It didn't take Regina long to realize not to cry when she needed anything. She learned to be silent. When Regina turned 2 years old, she saw a lot of hearts left on a table by one of her sisters. Regina knew that heart meant love, something that she needed since she came into this world. Regina aged, and every year on Valentine's Day, she saw the hearts and felt the need to be held.
What?
She felt the need to be told. Huh? Am I reading it too fast?
He might have been talking to somebody else. Darlene, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Regina aged, and every year on Valentine's Day, she saw the parts and felt the need to be held. She felt the need to be told she was loved. She desired to be told she was a good girl. Regina found 8 sticker hearts. She decided to make wishes on them. With the first heart, she wished that her mother loved her. On the second heart, she wished that her father loved her. On the third heart, she wished that her brothers and sisters loved her. The fourth heart was a wish that someone, anyone, would love her. The fifth heart was a wish that she wouldn't be hungry anymore. The sixth heart was a wish that she wouldn't be hit or yelled at anymore. She decided to save the other two hearts for later. Regina grew up and came upon the remaining hearts one day. She wondered, where did these come from? This seems so childish to me. As Regina tried to discard the remaining hearts, she felt a sense of reluctancy. She couldn't understand it. It just seemed like bits of paper. Paper? How can I throw these away? Regina started having terrible dreams. It was a little girl named Gigi talking to her. The little girl reminded her of herself when she was little. The horrendous dreams came frequently. The dreams didn't make any sense to her, so she decided to go see a psychiatrist. He had diagnosed her with having DID, which is Dissociative Identity Disorder, PTSD, which is Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and depression. The psychiatrist gave Regina the name of a psychologist who specialized in these fields. She was a clinical psychologist. Psychologists gave Regina some titles of some books to read so Regina could understand her condition. She thought she had a happy childhood. She soon realized that wasn't true at all. When Regina was little, she was smart with a bright imagination. With the pain, she felt, Regina couldn't take the pain alone. So out of Regina developed another person who helped her to cope. Regina knew nothing of this happened. Things were difficult for Gigi. She couldn't handle it alone. She needed a bigger person that could do things that only big girls could do. So in came the help of Miss Love. The three parts of Regina were Regina, the body of core, Gigi, who took a lot of the abuse, and Miss Love, who took on the difficult tasks that were expected of Regina, the adult task. Regina only knew of herself, but she had to admit that she had blackouts and time lapses. The books made sense. People called Regina other names. Regina would just smile at them and walk on by. Gigi and Miss Love told the therapist the story behind the heart. The therapist had an idea. She told the different personalities to tell the hearts the stories, to share the pain, to get the feelings out, to throw the hearts away. These hearts don't bleed if you yell, scream, or cry. These hearts can take it. The therapist's idea worked, although it took time. The abuse didn't happen overnight, so the healing won't happen overnight either. Soon, the three personalities became one adequate, loving person. Today, the new Regina always takes sticker hearts wherever she goes. Eska approaches people with a friendly hello. Eska is a mild heaven one of her hearts. She tells them with a smile, this is to remind you that someone cares. Regina started using her past to help others who had been abused and traumatized. She wanted to get the word out that she could overcome the abuse, could never give up. They are true survivors. Do not see yourself as weak or no good. See yourself as a strong person you truly are.
Absolutely. Amen.
Uh-huh. That's
thank
awesome,
you for
darling.
That. Yeah.
Absolutely
you.
Beautiful. So,
I'm
Kim,
so sorry
to,
that you felt that way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but if I didn't feel that way, though, how could I really empathize with all these other people that are feeling the same thing?
Yeah, that's true.
Do you understand what I'm getting at?
That's true. Oh, absolutely.
No.
Yeah.
Hate the abuse happened to me. I hate the abuse happens to all these, to the people that it happens to. There's no way to sugarcoat it or anything. The only way I can feel good about it is I can use my story to help others.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I will be in that sinkhole forever. I'll be on the other side of that log with its complete darkness, where there's no light. I'll just keep seeing through the dark shapes and never having a clear focal point to see through.
Yeah.
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 I don't know why I'm talking about this. Sorry.
No.
You got me mostly.
And you tell it. You tell it so beautiful. You do. You just have the words, and you know there's some people that like myself that I feel I don't express things very well, and you do a really good job at expressing it and take us there. You know.
Well, I think you're expressing yourself well with me.
Well, thank you, darling.
Well, you're quite welcome.
No.
Some of these notes that I wrote down earlier before I go back. Huh? Go ahead.
I was going to say that you know, any time that we have a conversation together, Darlene, is that we never have a problem expressing ourselves, do we, together?
No,
because
we don't.
we want to talk about what's coming out of our heart and discuss some issues that needs to be talked about, you know. And that's one thing that you do well. You know, Kim really does bring up a good point. And I think that's probably your biggest thing when I look at you and you know, knowing you as well as I do, is that, you know, your communication level is just wonderful for people. It really is.
Thank you. I appreciate y'all saying that. Because when I go back on some of the notes that I had written previously that I had found in this notebook, this would bring you back to the time when you would feel the type of things that I used to feel. Like, I'm saying, thank God now for his protection. I survived because of him. I was degraded, stripped, my clothes completely stripped naked to less than an ant. I was nothing, no bigger than a pest. Than a little bitty bug. Ants are busy, but I was a mistake, no purpose. You ever watch ants when they're scurrying around? Do you see they're busy doing things and taking food and things, but do you see how they kind of like bump into each other quite a bit?
I was wondering if they had, you know, some headaches, because they do. Yeah, it's always a crash.
Mm-hmm. I bet they could really have a big headache when they move that big rubber tree plant, you know. And then I went on to write, I look around as I see others around me. I want to tell, but I see a brother. It is our secret. Our secret. Have to keep our secret. Climb back into your shell and don't speak. I was robbed by the adult whose job as a parent is to nurture a child physically, spiritually, and a lot of other basic needs that adults are supposed to provide for a child, especially safety. love, compassion. I learned early children were to be seen but not heard. Do y'all understand those feelings associated with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just,
absolutely.
You know, be seen. Yeah, or be seen when it's convenient for the adults, when they want you around.
Well, yeah, no.
Yeah.
When it's usually back that directed. Yeah, there was times when, there were some good times when my daddy would pick us up when I was about in the 10-year-old. And he had been on a long trip, and when he came back home, he would go pick us up at school. Can you imagine all nine of us kids he picked up at school? Okay. So we got home. He had a badminton thing put up, and so we started playing badminton. And I really liked when he, to me, that showed us that he cared some, that he wanted to spend some time with us.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But it still doesn't take away from the pain about the beaten with whips and knocked across the floor and knocked unconscious. And, you know,
no.
Don't take away any of that, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, Darlene, that's, you know, one of the issues that we have to talk about, you know, exactly that, is because there's a lot of, you know, love and then there's abuse, you know, and you can't mix the two, because I don't believe that there is the two, you know, together. How can you ever abuse someone that you love? You can tell them that, but do you really mean it? I mean, I don't believe those two coexist together.
Right. Exactly. So is there a part in my story that you have questions about, and then I'll try to go to that sequence?
Yeah, if you want to, that's fine. You know, but I'm looking at you know, some of your bio, and a lot of people that are listening to your show don't really know about your history, okay? And the things that you've really been through around the vaccines to let them know about how far down you were really in your life at one time. I mean, you know, and I'll just kind of like paint the picture a little bit to explain about how far you've come, because technically you were married and in high school at the end. And then basically you went away, you know, so you were 18, I guess, you know. And, you know, it was like you were running, you know, already from as an 18-year-old, you know, from abuse that you've had since you've been a baby. So, I mean,
you put in mind
a lot of stuff.
You got to put in mind by the age of two, when I went back, started going to therapy, and then I had to try to figure out when the sexual abuse started.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see my body at 2 or 3 year old, mama put my naked body on the kitchen table with my daddy's army buddies drinking with him. And you remember them old metal tables that they had in the 60s that a lot like a lot of diners had, you know? And it had like enamel at top looking, red or yellow.
Right, yeah.
And that's how the table was, and it had ridges all around the edges. So as an adult, I could go back and describe what I saw when I was a kid, even though I might not know how to describe it when I was a kid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I seen my daddy and his buddy open up a beer bottle at the side ridge of the table, and they were seated right beside each other. And I could tell that the bottle of my dad's army buddy had a chip on it. It had a little, you know, didn't come off neatly. It shattered just a little bit, just a little tiny sliver, you know. And so, but my mom this was supposedly my birth mom, supposedly my birth dad, right? And she put me on the kitchen table and told me I better lie still. Can you imagine how cold the metal table was? But we knew we could not cry. We could not voice out. If they told you to be quiet already at age 2 or 3, you better. We already knew that you better do what you're told.
Right.
And then my mom went around the table to, like, where the head part of me was, and my dad and his army buddy got up and went to where my legs were. My daddy stood behind the army buddy. Well, my mom told me I better lie there and I better not cry because he gave her $30 to $35 to do this to me. And he inserted the beer bottle while my dad watched. Next thing I recall is I'm in the bathtub, and when you're 2 or 3 years old, your body's so tiny, and they had the bathtub where it was all the water was all the way up to my where my little nipples was a little bitty kid, you know, and so I could not even move a little bit because I felt like I was going to be slipping down underwater. I was afraid to move, but I could remember the water looking blood red.
Your mom didn't say anything to you. Why it was like that. There was no explanation, so you're just wondering, right?
I didn't even wonder because the thing is, I already knew that we were not to say anything. We were the adult. We were a puppet. We were their robot. You know, you don't wonder. And ask, it's like my mind was their mind, you know? You just do as you're told.
And you were 2 or 3 at this time, Darlene?
Yes.
That is.
And the next time I remember is, thank you, and next time I remember is my dad going in the living room where I'm laying on a red, old plastic-like couches, and he parts my legs, and I'm naked again, and he has a knife, and he cuts off part of me. Part of my labium majora, part that's on the outside. It got 2/3 off on one side. And I looked up.
Sorry,
I didn't scream. I didn't cry. I knew I couldn't have no emotions. I was just blank. I was just blanking like, he's the daddy. He's the adult. Got to do what he says.
So you were basically being threatened in its own right, you know. So that's just more trauma induced on top of, you know, being sexually abused at the same time, you know. And just getting it in physical also, you know.
Yes, I had a sister that was about 7, 8 years older than me, and Dad was messing with her. And mom had walked in on Dad raping her, but mom went in there and beat my sister saying, you're trying to steal my husband. Mm-hmm. And then so she changes her mind, and then she goes and has him arrested. Then she goes and gets him back out of jail. And my sister sees Dad coming up, and she locks all the doors, and she said, here I am. Me, you know, being 2 or 3 years old, right? And she said, I have to knock you to the floor and get on your body because you don't know that even though that he's shooting through the window and there's splinters of wood and glass and everything going everywhere, you don't know to get down. You were just watching him when watching all that. You didn't know to get down. She said, I had to knock you down and climb onto your body, and I got the splinters and glass and stuck in me and all that's what she said, you know. So she took that for me. But she said he was trying to shoot me.
Jeez.
So that's all I basically knew was I was feeling like they just want me dead.
Yeah.
And Mom ended up leaving us in a grocery store too many times, five of us, and the two oldest at this time were put in an orphanage when Mom abandoned five of us. But my sister
so
was 2 years
leave
older than me.
In the store? She would leave you
yes,
in the store?
Yes, in the grocery store, yes. Right. And luckily my sister that's 2 years older than me knew my aunt's phone numbers, and she would call my aunt to come get us. And Mom would never come back till a week later, and then my aunt grew tired of that. And she said, "You're not taking these youngins anywhere." And she made my mom leave, and that's what ended up with the divorce between my dad and Mom, because my aunt was tired of that.
And then
a lot of that...
Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say was that, you know, I can only imagine, you know, what it was like for you to remember that now. And these are the things that we have to talk about with a lot of people, because basically, you know, when people remember things that happened to them at such a young age later on in their life, is that it didn't come to you, you know, overnight, did it, Darlene, with a lot of this?
No. Oh,
so
man,
let's
when
talk
this
a little
stuff
bit,
started
let's
coming
talk a little
to
bit
me.
About that. So let's talk a little bit about
when this
that.
Stuff,
is that there's a lot. I know there's a lot. But
right.
this stuff that
when
we're
this,
talking about right
stuff,
now, yeah.
When this stuff started coming to me, I was so angry. I could not even lay down. I tried to lay down to try to sleep. And then it's like I was hearing all these noises in my head, the memories, all these thoughts, and I didn't know what all these voices in me were trying to tell me. And it's like, oh, I felt like I was evil and everything. And I even attempted suicide different times, and I was mad. I would go get the tub, and I would have a razor blade, try to slit my wrist, and I was mad because the razor blade wouldn't cut me. I was so mad because the knife wasn't supposed to cut through anything. Would not even cut through my skin. I was so mad. It's like, why are you not letting this happen, God? I want to just pray. Let me just do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my son walked in one time. I had my back turned to him, and I turned around, and I was throwing away my arm, and I thought, oh, my goodness, I just shocked my kid. He saw this. That really, really hurt me. And I told him, don't worry, it's not cutting my hand. I said, but don't cry that. Don't cry yourself, please. I said, I'm mad because of the
lesson. How old was he, Darlene? How old was he? Can I ask you that?
He had to be about 8 or 9.
Okay.
He was witnessing his daddy beating me and knocking me for flips and all this other kind of stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too much when the police said that he could beat me all he liked as long as he didn't kill me. The church said, it's my only way to heaven is go ahead and let him kill me. That's my only way to heaven. So I really didn't feel like there was any way out.
Right.
Yeah.
I really didn't. And then when I go... And I'm doing Family Tree at a Huntsville, in Huntsville, there's a lot of Huntsvilles around, you know. Anyway, in a public library, and there was a state trooper that I had talked to him over the phone, so we decided we're going to meet at this public place. And right when he seen me, he said, I remember you. And I did not even get seated down at the table or nothing yet. I was just getting ready to put my purse down and my notebooks that I had to take notes on and stuff. I was about ready to put that down. But I said, from what? He said, from all the sex abuse. He said, I still remember you. My dad had over 300 child pornos, and you were in the majority of them. And he said, it makes me excited just thinking of doing you. and my legs went whoops. I fell backwards. My legs went out from underneath me. I tried to catch myself on the table. I fell back into a chair, but the chair started going backwards too. But I had to catch myself on that table, and I was Lord, please help me. I could not believe this was a state trooper that's supposed to protect. And I said, since your daddy is dead, I hope that you dispose of these child pornos, right? He said, no, his daddy had some friends that enjoyed watching them. So he just gave them to a certain best friend of his.
That's right, I just violated
all over again, you know. And I said, well, how old was I in them tapes? He said, you were from ages 4 to 9. And see, and I didn't remember that. He told me that.
That is unbelievable. He remembered such details, you know, such a hideous situation. I mean, that is just unbelievable, Dolly. And, you know, I can only imagine how you feel.
That's
terrible.
And then I knew I didn't have the support of my husband when I went back home either, you know.
And I do know, Darlene, that we're a little well over an hour into the show, and I think it's a good time to, you know, just take a deep breath and just know that, you know, you are among family here. We love you so much, okay? And, man, you've been through so much, Darlene. You know, it's terrible. It really is. And it's one of the, you know, most hideous stories that I've ever heard, because you have so much, you know, that you've been through, but you're doing so much for society, and that's what we're going to get at. And I do want to reemphasize that NASCA, you know, does have a call-in number. So if there's anyone out there that wants to call in and ask Dolly a question or leave a comment, our number is area code 646-595-2118. So, and if you just want to listen to the show, you can always do that through our website, which is www.nasca.org. So I do want to bring Kim in, if it's okay, Kim, to talk to Darlene a little bit.
Oh, yeah, hi. Yeah. I'm here.
Hello.
No, I just, it's hard to hear some of the stuff. You know, my heart just breaks for the little girl that had to go through that. I'm so sorry for her.
Some of the people, like, I had to go see the doctor at my therapy, where I go for therapy to, and the nurse that takes some BP and a weight and all that, she said, I said, have you read any of the books? She said, I'm trying. She said, but knowing you firsthand, it is hard to take when you know somebody like that and that these things have happened to you and no one protected you.
Well, yeah, and I know, too, that just from my own experience, how hard it is to try and seek help from the church, because, yeah, there's just, and then the police officer that said that, I just can't imagine hearing that. I mean, it had to have been just, at the moment, it had to have been really hard, I think, to hear something like that. And hopeless.
And see, he was above a cop because he's a state trooper. That's even bigger than a normal water cop. This is the whole state police that he was a part of.
Just not right. And it shouldn't have happened. It should never have happened. It's just, you know, that's why we need to work to get rid of it. Right?
Well,
that's why we're all out there activating.
As long as we bound together, and we might never get over it, but we'll bring more people aware, and hopefully we won't, we can stop the fallacies of core beliefs where we think we're stupid, fat, ugly, retarded. It's our fault. Matter of fact, that's one thing I'm going to be talking on my show Wednesday night is the blame game, basically. How to turn around that blame to the other person, you know.
And two, you're right. You're so right, you know, both of you, about the situation, because as a leader in society, in other words, you know, serve, protect, and you know, honor, justice, and, you know, all of it should be there. You know, unfortunately, is that a lot of them seem to know the law, okay? So they use the law as a way to basically get out of helping someone a lot of times when no matter what the deal is, okay, they should be there for them at least in a way to, you know, offer some kind of protection. You know, listen, I can't do anything, you know, but however, you know, we do have, you know, some places that, you know, we can offer, or the phone number or something, you know. I mean, just something.
Right.
Because anything that you, you know, talk to a survivor about and offer them something positive, it could be the smallest thing in the world, but you might make that person's day. You might make their life. You know, you never know. So, I could really see that being so negative. Man, I hate that. I really do.
And one thing you got to think about, if these people are not defending the person that's a victim and getting traumatized and stuff, or protecting a child, it makes you feel like they're a part of doing that with their own mates and their own kids and all. You can't wonder that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you were getting ready to tell us about the blame game.
Right. Oh, it was so many years. One of my therapists, she was getting so upset at me. She was like, "Now, whose fault is that?" I said, "Mine. How can you say it's your fault? It's my fault. I deserved it. It happened to me. I was such a bad girl. I deserved everything that happened to me." But see, I could not get over that being done to me my entire life. And my stepmom, kind of the core belief that she was teaching me was, if something keeps happening and it's repeatedly happening from different folks in your life, that means there's something wrong with you. It's nothing wrong with everybody else. It's something that's wrong with you. So that's a way
This is the same one that used to drag you by your hair that you told me about?
Yes, it held me down while her son raped me and used to dip my nose in cow manure and make me wear it to town and all that stuff. Yes.
Wow.
See, so that's just some of the things. And the baby incident and everything too. Yes.
You know, these are some of the things that, you know, we don't really go into a lot of, you know, graphic details here with something, because there's really never enough time, basically. And that's, but what I'm getting at here is that, you know, it happens to a lot of people in a lot of different ways. But, you know, Darlene has been through a lot of things that some people wouldn't even believe if you told them about it, you know. And I can tell you that I've known her for a very long time, and these stories are true, and they are horrific, you know. And to know her like I do today, and to see where she came from, and it's such an amazing journey, you know, to see you at this level in your life these days, you know. And I know that,
yes,
that writing does a lot for you, and, you know, of course, with Shattered Innocence, you know, that's such a beautiful book, you know. And I hope that, you know, it's everything that you, you know, have hopes and dreams about.
Thank you so much. You know, the thing is, writing it did not help me until I knew that there was somebody that understood what I was saying, that they got it, that this was helping them. That's when I started with a, you know, like I said, when I wrote that other thing and all them other people wanted a copy of that because it helped describe how they felt. And that's really what has me motivated, is really telling my, where I can maybe be somebody else's voice who can't be a voice, who don't have a voice.
Yeah, that's very true.
A therapist that I seen here after I moved here about six, seven years ago now, and he told me that in the 6 or 7 years he was already a therapist that long before he saw me, okay? And so he said, I am the fifth or sixth person with just about the same identical type of stuff happening, including the baby situation. All in this same general vicinity. So people that say, oh, no, that didn't happen, excuse me. So he told me the mother ones could not write about their lives and their stories, but by me going ahead and doing it, that I'll be telling their horrific stories as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I got a big burden on my shoulders.
Well, you know, I don't know if that's so much a burden to me. I know it is coming from your side, and from my side, I look at it, you know, as an opening, you know, coming from a dark place to a light place. How many times have we talked about that, you know, talked about that tunnel being, you know, affected by, you know, so many things that happened to you in your life, is finding ways to come out of those things, you know? So I know that,
right,
you know, you've been through so much, you know, and you know, you have some other new stuff I know that you're writing on too. So you want to talk more about some of that?
Oh, the other thing that I was talking about that I was writing on, and I'm going to be, there's a friend of mine that's going to be having a telethon, and it's going to be held basically in North Carolina, and it's going to be for human traffickers. They're going to try to hold it the end of October. That's where they're going for.
Okay.
And so I think if anybody wants to get involved with that, please reach out. Human trafficking awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I've got them on my radio show, my radio program, and you can look the guy up as well. On my Facebook.
So your radio show program is called From Tears to Triumph, isn't that correct? And that's on also on Blog Talk
right.
Radio, right? And that's every
yeah.
like Wednesday. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
Yeah, that's just beautiful. I know you've had a lot of people on your show, and you've been on a lot of shows, which is, to me, one of the best ways for, you know, people to not only talk about things, but it's also a great way to meet new people, you know. And that's the relationships, I think, that, you know, we all have kind of been looking for a long time. So, you know, how's it, you know, affected your life, Darlene, about, you know, having to meet so many survivors now and, you know, actually writing books about it and you know, having platforms to go, and especially like through Nashville and things of that nature, you know?
I'm not going to kid you there. It is difficult because at times you do have to take time away from that, because you get burnt out very easily.
That's good advice.
To read this one poem, and then it goes and explains it after each little thing, and it's in my book too, and I think this helps explain how a lot of people who've been through similar, no matter what
mm-hmm.
kind of abuse, even heartache or whatever, okay? The name of this is called I Need to Know. I need to know if all is okay. Tired of this never-ending battle. Never knowing which direction, from here or there. Scattered like seeds in the wind. Shattered like a broken window pane. Never-ending, bleeding, turning, yearning. Always a response of no. Is who is responsible? Feel remorse? Oh, but of course, no remorse. I need to know they feel remorse. I need to know if you're understanding, sympathy and love and acceptance. So I need to know what's written around 1998. I was still married and having horrendous flashbacks. Before reading on, please take a moment to reread it and then try to understand the emotional concept in this lyrics. I need to know if all is okay, tired of this never-ending battle. Years ago when I wrote this, I did not feel all was okay, since I did not want to struggle to get better. At the end of the tunnel was more darkness, more cruelty, more pain. I am happy now. I struggled and did not give up. Well, God wouldn't let me give up. Sorry, I did keep giving up, but he refused to give up on me, I guess. By God's mercy and grace, I survived. There were some good times and some bad times. That is a part of life. It is well worth viewing it from a healthy, healing standpoint than through the dark shades I previously used. If someone thinks to tell someone who is going through something similar to stop being so negative, do not say that. Be there for that person. Let them express themselves. Do not question and tell them things you would have done if. You did not live their life. It was not you who learned it was not okay to have your own thoughts and ideas. Some who are reading this understand what I am saying because they endured it. It is hard hearing others say they would have done this or that. They have no clue. It does not help the person deal with the memories of trauma. In fact, it is infuriating and belittling. It tells a survivor they should have done something differently when, in fact, they did the best they could during the trauma. Yes, yet they survived. That is the number one thing. Never knowing which direction from here or there. I never knew which direction to go for help. Only a few skilled enough to truly help. The ones who were not skilled enough told me such atrocities as, you were never sexually abused. You wanted your dad to have sex with you, but it never happened. You lied about your past, etc. Boy, all this ticked me off for so many years. When it reared its ugly head, I was devastated, to say the least. I did not know how to deal with such traumatic sexual abuse. These memories of trauma, there was no way I was going to push these memories down again and steal them as to lie to myself by denying it. It was unnerving when I realized the truth. Finding a therapist who listened and seemed to understand without judging is what I deem a truly skilled therapist, thoughtful and compassionate. Scattered like seeds in the wind, shattered like a broken window pane. I had so many mixed emotions at the time from being abused in the past and dealing with the present abuse I endured. That is why I was incapable of seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. Here and now was abuse as well. It was a hurricane of internal emotions I felt. I can be loved. I am worthy of being loved. I can't be loved. I'm not good enough to be loved. I'm not worthy of love. All of those emotions at the same time, what a conflict of emotions. It was all because I was not loved. My husband did not console me when I cried. Often the resounding word, shut up. Always told to shut up, even as a child. I was told children were to be seen and not heard. I felt it was never ending. But it does end. I do not feel the daily pain of abuse, whether it be past or present, though I do feel the pain often. Sometimes it is like a slap in the face. No conflicts for the new. I'm elated that the pain has dissipated tremendously. I used to feel that I was all alone and no one cared. At times I feel the loneliness, but now I can see that others care. There are a lot of people who do not know me who care. It is human nature. Good people genuinely care. Shattered like a broken window pane, never-ending bleeding, turning, yearning, always a response of no. Because who is responsible for remorse? Oh, but of course, no remorse. At the time I wrote the above poem, I felt like I wanted the abusers to feel the remorse for the pain they inflicted upon me. In my healing, I accept the fact I do not need to feel their remorse. I feel bad for the perpetrators and pray that they get their hearts right with God. I've left the bad, negative, abusive family and friends behind. I acknowledge that abusers in general deny that they ever did any heinous acts towards the victim. They usually blame the victim, saying things such as, they're crazy. They like being hit. They make things up. They hurt me instead. if you try to get an apology, usually you will not acquire one. You may leave hurt and angry because they blame you instead of accepting their own faults. Pray for them. I had to stop blaming myself. Boy, that was tough. I had accepted the blame for many years. I'd always believed I deserved all the bad abuse that happened. I used to believe everyone was treated the way I was. I wonder why God would put us all on this earth just to receive beatings, abuses, etc., but no love. I'm happy to know I was wrong. To note, punishment is one thing, but cruelty and abuse are entirely different. Parents are to rear their children in the ways of the Lord. I learned things that happened to me because of man's free will. I need to know to feel remorse. I need to know and feel understanding, sympathy, love, and acceptance. From accepting all this, I now feel understanding and empathy instead of sympathy, love, and acceptance. I do not need sympathy anymore. I need understanding, just so others will help the abused and downtrodden, those very people dealing with memories of trauma. Learn to not judge by what you believe when you hear someone's story. The end.
Yes. Now that's great.
Oh, well,
Starling.
Yeah. So, Kim, would you like to jump in for a second? Y'all have a lot in common. Y'all both authors. I think that both of you are life coaches, you know. How do you, Kim, you know, use your writing in like, you know, Darlene said it didn't come easy to her and it took a long time and things of that nature. What about you when it comes down to writing?
No, I do not think of myself normally as a writer. I've been working on my autobiography as well, but I had a section put into the Roaring Lambs. It's called Roaring Faith, and it's volume number 5. So I had my testimony put in there, and that was the first time I'd ever really written. And when I did it, it was pretty easy to do that. And now working on my biography, autobiography.
Uh-huh.
It's not as easy as much of a writer.
Girl,
so that's why I admire, you know, people that have done the book, because it is not an easy thing. And I think there are times that I feel like I get stuck because maybe there's a blockage, so, you know, that I need to work on at times. So I'll get there, but I do admire everything that you've written, just the way that you put everything out there, and you're so articulate with your words. And
you know what I had to do right there to start telling my story more? I had to write down on a piece of paper, and it took like about 5 or 6 different pages. And back then it was a different kind of printer system than what we got today. It had the lines at the sides, and you tore the sides off or whatever. I had to do that about so many things. And then I had to let a lot of the lyrics go, you know, because it takes more precedence in getting the story out that more people endure, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wrote, and now it's even easier today to write than it used to be, if you think of it this way, okay? If you think of it this way, remember when we had to write and type it all up on a typewriter? And you see all these ones on TV, and they're going like this, and they've got a mistake, and so they're going like this, and they're throwing all that paper, and half the room is full with scrapping of paper. And now what we got is where we can copy and edit and drop things in, and, you know.
Yeah,
it
is a
lot easier.
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's easier. And a lot of people tell me that my story some people taught me this before, that my story is kind of jumping around from this. I said, well, I can't help it. If I'm having to tell my story, I can't start at the beginning of my story and start going from there. I have to go like, okay, what it took for me to remember this, I was percent this age when I remembered back then, okay? Yeah. So I can't start at the very beginning. because it was a process of therapy I had to go through.
Sure, yeah. That makes perfect sense. I did a just a conference over the weekend that really brought to light, I think, how much more therapy I probably need. I've been doing it for a while, but I might need some more just to be able to get to, through that again, back to that state of brain stuff. But
I'm really angry about not knowing what had happened in Nashville. I think it was last weekend or part of this week still. I'm not sure. But it was about victims of any kind of abuse. And there was people getting up there talking and sharing their stories and stuff. And I feel like, man.
Oh, where was it? It was in Nashville?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
I saw it on the news today, and I said, what?
I didn't
and
hear
the
that.
Now
no, I didn't. Yeah, that would have been.
And to know our friend Tanisha. Yes, and to know our friend Tanisha, and she was in Memphis recently, right? So she wouldn't have had to go that much further to get to Nashville and do that, you know. Hello. There's several different of her friends that said that they were in Memphis too, and I was like, what was there for family, this other thing? And I said, nobody was there for the conference at all.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think that's awesome, darling. I really do. I mean, wow. Now, you going to be doing some work with human trafficking, right, coming up?
Exactly. And he's looking for other people that have been sexually abused also. And they're going to actually, in that thing, it's going to be like a three-day thing, almost like a Jerry Lewis telephone, and they're going to have singers and all that there too, well-known people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, fun. And it's
going
to
be interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
And I'll be doing it over Zoom too, y'all, because I won't be going all the way to North Carolina.
Oh, you are. Okay. Oh, good to know.
So
when
is it
again? That
he's trying to make sure that he wants to do it towards the 30th of October. He said, keep in mind, watch out for it at that human trafficking website.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look it up. You can look up Rob Stockton at Facebook, and that's him. He's the one that's got thing that he's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He hasn't been trafficked or anything, but he had noticed, and thank God to him, and noticing that this is something that really needs a lot of help.
You know, and I'll tell you what, Darlene, that this is the best platform, you know, that you could ever do is to get out here like you are tonight. And, you know, with other people that come on the show, I mean, if you look, through the NASCA website, is that we have a lot of good connections, you know, specifically to do with things of that, you know, of trafficking. And also, you know, which unfortunately comes along, you know, with several types of abuse and also with the foster care system, too, you know. So I can't, you know, wait for you to, talk about that experience coming up also. And that's what's great, you know, about the things that you do is that you're always
that
in the center, you know.
Yeah, you kind of reminded me of something, too, with that about the human trafficking. And back when I was a little girl, there was a little bit of time. I did live in Florida. Was around the Orlando area. And, you know, that's where a big array of traffickers are. And I could remember my mom, this was before Daddy and her divorce, I remember her taking me into a restaurant, and I was thinking, a little innocent 2-3-year-old girl thinking, oh, man, I feel special. I'm going to get my own soda or get me a bite to eat. I feel so special coming into this restaurant all alone with Mommy. You know, I feel so neat. And then all of a sudden this guy would walk up to Mom and say, oh, she's such a cute little kid. You want to buy her? And some of the men would buy me and take her off of me. Just do anything you want to with her as long as you don't kill her. Just bring her back alive.
See?
Can't imagine.
And, but there were some good, I will tell you something on a positive note. I won't say all these people that bought me were bad, okay? There was actually a couple ones that was good that bought me and just to go and spend time with their kid and play with their daughter.
Oh, wow.
And
I'm
relying
like
and thinking of this time. That's the positive part of that. You know, it all was about negative. Thank God for that.
Right.
So it did not keep me downbeated no matter how much they tried.
But the fact that she was renting you out, basically, you know, and never really knew. Yeah, and really never really knew, you know, how the outcome was ever going to be. I mean, that, to me, is just one of the scariest things. It's like, you know, you might not see your daughter again, you know, kind of thing. I mean, that is just terrific, man.
Yeah, and he said that a doctor went and did my hysterectomy back when I was after my two kids I had with my marriage, and I didn't remember that other baby. I told you that for a long time. And the doctor, he pulled up a chair right after doing the hysterectomy. I mean, he said, were you abused? And I said, yeah, that's over and done with. I'm okay. It's a past, it's long ago, whatever, you know. He said, I'm talking about where you sexually abused. I said, I think so, but that's when Pandora's box started opening, when he brought that to my awareness. That he said, I had nobody, not ever seen nobody internally as messed up as you are. He said, I was working 2 hours just removing scar tissue, and it was like none had been removed at all from all that sex abuse.
Wow, that had to have really hurt. Sorry. I had to go through that. But it is
well,
true. I mean, our bodies know.
You're alive. Do what?
Yeah, you're alive. Yeah, our bodies know. And they keep score, you know. I've heard that. The body
yeah, there's
keeps
that
the score.
Out.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it does. And you never really know. I mean, you wouldn't have ever realized that. How would you know?
Yeah, and like one time when the doctor came up, and I'd have been in different doctors for my nose, right, for ear, nose, and throat doctors. They would say, well, nothing's wrong with your nose. You're fine, you know. And I go, why am I having so much trouble breathing? Well, finally, about 2001, put in mind I was born in around the early 60s, okay, and did not find out till around 2001, I went to this doctor had my entire body scanned and everything. And he said, what happened to your nose when you were about 6 years old? I said, well, I was 7. I fell out of a bunk bed, landed on my nose. He said, no, this was done intentionally to you. I said, well, I keep seeing my daddy coming at me with a pair of pliers. I said, I don't know if that's true or not. He said, the plier grooves are still embedded in your cartilage.
Oh.
So my daddy actually used the pliers and twisted my nose all the way around where it was blocked on one side all the way from I was 6 years old up until that doctor did a surgery on me.
Oh, gosh.
And it keeps going back, going like that, because that was during my growing years. So a lot of people say, with this past abuse, you know, so what? It passed. I'm still suffering from it. Because
yeah.
my ear, nose, and throat doctors, he told me, he said, it happened during your growing years, so it's going to keep trying to go back how he did when you were a kid, what he did to it.
Huh.
So I had to keep having surgery on my nose because of him. So is that another form of abuse? I think so.
Yeah, that's terrible.
But, you know.
You know, Darlene, you had a large family,
uh-huh.
too. Do you keep in contact with any of your siblings at all? Or?
No. Now, I do write my plan, but I don't want no part of her. I do have a closeness with a brother that's 2 years younger than me. We talk. I had never, and he rescued two kids himself recently, a couple years ago. And so we're going kind of like going down in that same Perseo type of thing, but he's living it and going, raising these two boys out here to help them out,
yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. And he adopted them and stuff. And so,
that's interesting. Mm-hmm.
But my other, like, well, my sister is 2 years older than me. She said the things that were done to me is God's punishment for me being a bad girl, and I deserved all that. So why should I have her in my life? Why should I have a brother in my life who says that I need to look at my daddy as a hero?
Mm-hmm.
How could I look at my daddy as a hero with all the things he's done? Seriously. So I just prefer not to have those kind of people in my life that's going to belittle me. And
right.
I don't need it.
Yeah,
I don't need them
point.
In my life.
Yeah.
It really
you know,
is
you're
a good point.
Mm-hmm.
If I see myself, if I want to go back down that rabbit hole, so to speak, if you want to call it a rabbit hole, I'm going to go back down there, and then I will be in the deepest dark depression. I will never be able to get back out if I had that badly back in my life.
Yeah.
And I don't think God wants me to go through that and put that through.
And, you know, unfortunately, too, and that's one of the things that we do have to, you know, separate ourselves from, and it being, you know, abused like that, and there were, you know, family members around. A lot of time, relationships will just never work. You know, I know that's in my family. It's in a lot of families that I know. And listen, you know, I always think that there was a time and a place. However, you know, it's about healing and growing. You know, I'm not going to take 5 steps back. I might take a step back, but I'm not going to take 5 back if it'll never get me, you know, to where I just want a positive life. You know, the drama and all of that is nothing but trauma, you know. And we've been through enough of that in our lives. So sometimes we have to separate, you know, that family life, you know, with our lives. Very true.
You ever hear that saying that God's got this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, back when I was abused by my ex-husband, right, there was these neighbors I used to go walk to their house and have Bible study. You know, just down the road a little bit, so I used that exercise instead of driving, you know, just get a little bit of air and stuff. But anyway, they showed up because they hadn't seen me in a while, and they showed up with a little plaque that was framed, and it had my name in the center of it, and it said, God's gracious gift. I said, my name don't mean that. And she said, yes, it does, too. But y'all know I'm not using my real name anyway. I'm using my author name, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I thought, well, you know, that's a really oxymoron because my dad always said that I was a mistake to even God. And then they're the one that named me, and yet my name means God's gracious gift. And I thought, you got that, God.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they do? They didn't know the definition, did they?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
Yeah, no.
And I was not a mistake to God, and God, you know, evidently would not let the stuff cut me because he wanted me here, evidently, you know. And boy, was I mad at God for so long for not letting me take my own life, you know. But now I'm glad he did. So I want y'all to know that y'all want to think about giving up and don't try to, you might not be as lucky as I was about surviving because God brought me through it.
That's what I think.
He really did.
You know,
and
that,
he showed me
that you should tell us. That's what I think you should tell us. We have right at about 10 minutes left, and why don't you, you know, share what you've done spiritually, Darlene, to, you know, be where you are today, considering where you were.
Well, lot of things, there had been different attacks on, especially with the day and times that we're coming across right now. It seems like that enemy just keeps trying to bring people down. But one thing in the Bible, there's two words in that one scripture that I really love more than any other verse in the Bible. And Jesus wept. Y'all want to know why that's so important to me?
Yeah, sure.
Because all these men that say it's not okay to cry. So if you think you're above God and Christ, you know, Christ cried, and you think you're above, you might as well, you know, if you think you're above God and not having no emotions, excuse me, God said it's okay for a man to cry, and Jesus cried, you know? It's okay to cry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really has helped me a lot more than that. And it was kind of funny that a lot of times we were a gospel singing group part of the time also, even though we weren't going to church that much, really, in the first place. But then all of a sudden, my stepmom started playing the piano, and we started having to go up there and having to sing in front of everybody. And it was just a little act in front of everybody to make it look like we were these good, godly Christians, you know. But I was really feeling God in me. And to run
among
some of these adults that see me when I was this little kid, and they said, I remember you. Said everybody always talked about that girl that was always close. I said, yeah, they always forced me to get close to everybody, and I was so scared.
Yeah.
They said, you really showed that you had God in you, and said, did you know that you were offered a recording deal and your stepmom turned it down? I said, no, I didn't know that. I don't know what? So when you're finding all this other stuff out, there's more that your family isn't sharing with you, and then you've got all these strangers that come and say, I knew you back then, and this is what happened. It's like, wow, this is amazing. So I was loved. Mm-hmm. I did matter to people. Y'all wouldn't think I was stupid and ugly and fat, retarded, and saying I'm wasting time, wasting space. Mm-hmm. That's the core beliefs that they want you to believe so that they can have that control over you. Take that control back. Mm-hmm. Take that control back. That's what helped me away from my evil stepmom. She said, I wish you would go ahead and kill yourself right then and on the spot when she said that. I thought, oh, heck no, you ain't going to win.
No, she just couldn't have been in her right mind at all. I mean, it's, you know that. She just wasn't in her right
mind. I was the type of person that would do whatever they said, though. See, they didn't expect me to snap back out of it myself, okay? I was their robot. But guess what? What snapped in me that I was like, the heck you say?
Yeah. Well.
And I could only attribute that to God. I could only say, thank you, God. You did it. You did it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. Praise God for that.
So whatever you do, there are so many people who care. Like I said, when I read that, people care, and you might think that people don't care. And I kind of like when I read that, reminded about those hearts in that story. I said, well, maybe that's one thing we could do, too. We could draw a little heart on the paper and, you know, scribble it out after we tell it some of our anger, some of these pains, and get dispose of that heart because they don't bleed, you know?
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, I mean, there is. A disconnect, I think, and we've talked about this almost every week on the show, that there's a disconnect there with people who have been abused who continue to be abused. I mean, there's just, I don't know if it's they haven't seen anything different and so that's why they continue on this abuse, or if it's because, you know, and there's probably a good mixture of both of it. or because they just don't care. But I think that definitely there's always going to be somebody eventually, I think, in a family that will finally say, no, this is enough, and try and change the trajectory of for their family. And you would think, you know, you would think that your parents, like, I think the same thing. You would think that my parents would have wanted that for me, but they didn't know. They didn't know, really. And
this
I'm convinced of that.
Mine just wanted money. She just looked at opportunity and told me even in the 90s, I mean, 2001, 2002, I think I said I talked to her last, or somewhere around then. And she said, are you showing your naked body to men like you supposed to? I said, no, Mom, I'm an adult. I got a choice now. And I kept telling her that. She said, well, I wish I would have killed you when you were a baby like I wanted to.
Aww.
And I went click and never spoke to her again. So, you know, she was still thinking that negative stuff even when I was in my 30s, late 30s,
yeah,
early
20s. I can't believe that, Darlene. That is just terrible, you know, that she would just continue, you know, to – that's abuse in its own way of just mentally, you know, throwing stuff at you just to be that. You know, that is disgusting, absolutely disgusting.
Well, like, I had heard this saying recently, y'all, and this is very true, all right? Not every parent deserves to be a parent, but every child deserves a good parent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Very true, Darlene. So we have about 2 minutes left, Darlene. And I want to make sure that we get, you know, the name of the book out there, Shattered Innocence. And they could find you through Facebook, through NASCA. Is there some other areas that we can look for? And how do we get a hold of you through to get your book?
They could either, if they want a regular copy of the book, they could go to Amazon.com, look up Darlene J. Clark, C-L-A-R-K.
Okay.
If you don't want a signed copy, but if you want a signed copy, I do have a PayPal account. And they could send me enough money, how much ever the book costs, and then for me to be able to send it signed, you know, to them, you know. Because when I sign it, I don't just sign it. I write a little message of encouragement to them.
Mm-hmm. That's great to know. So do you want to, you know,
So it's against abuse. 8184@gmail.com. Whatever you do, do not lose faith. Do not lose hope. There are people that's on the NASCA where you can, there's a call, right? Y'all have a certain list of people you can contact. And I might still be on that list, and you can look me up and call me. And John's available. And I know Kim is. And there's a lot of other volunteers welcoming you to call them.
Yeah, that's true. And Darlene, I do want to thank you so much for being here tonight. You know, we talked about a lot of issues, and you know, of course, there's really never enough time to get them all in. But I do want to, you know, reemphasize that, you know, tonight was just a glorious story of where you've been and how far you've came and some of the things that you went through, you know, and even at a later age, you know, when she was taunting you and basically trying to get back into that negative dog spot, and you were able to walk away from that, you know. So you learn a lot, you know, about some of the things that you grew through. And I also do want to thank Kim Lakin for being here tonight with us also. It's always a pleasure, Kim, you know, to do these shows every week. So if y'all see something, please say something. And please keep the Bennis, and that's Penelope Bennis, in your prayers, please. Everyone have a good night.
Yeah, thank you, Darlene. Good night.
Thank you.
Love Talk Radio.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. Love y'all.
Good night.